Welcome to the Droma Preventative Health Podcast, hosted by the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association. We provide you with up-to-date information on health topics geared towards the Orthodox Jewish community. This podcast content is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for the medical advice of a physician.
Welcome to the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association, or JOMA podcast. I'm your host, Elisa Minkin. I am a general pediatrician and proud JOMA member. And today I'm really honored and really excited to be interviewing Dr. Ken Ginsberg. If there are topics you want to hear, you want to be interviewed, you know someone you want to hear being interviewed, you have comments on any of the talks that I've done or the other podcasters for the JOMA podcast have done, please reach out to us at health, H-E-A-L-T-H, at joma.org. We want to hear from you. I'm really excited about this, what I call a mini episode with Dr. Ginsberg, and I'm planning to do a longer one with him down the road. But we did this on a more urgent basis because this is Mental Health Awareness Month. This is being recorded on May 10th on Mental Health Awareness Month. And we wanted to do a special focus on the project that he's doing called hashtag #StandByTeens. So Dr. Ginsberg is a founder and program director for the Center for Parent and Teen Communication. He is a physician, adolescent medicine specialist, and professor of pediatrics at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He is committed to preparing adults to be the kind of people that adolescents deserve in their lives. He supports local, regional, and national organizations in developing programs and policies that strengthen families and see young people through a strength-based lens. He speaks to parent, professional, and youth audiences nationally and internationally, and is the author of 5 award-winning parenting books. His latest book is Congrats, You're Having a Teen, Strengthen Your Family and Raise a Good Person. Out now. Welcome, Dr. Ginsberg. Thank you so much for doing this with me today.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Oh, it's a real honor of mine. I was telling you before we started that I have listened to your interview on Leah Gugino's A Pediatric Meltdown and also on my colleague's Kids Doc Talk. Their interviews with you twice, not once, but twice. So I'm really excited. I'm like a little having a rock star moment here.
This is way too kind. It's a pleasure to be here.
So we're doing this like quickly, and later we're going to have a more in-depth talk. But this is really in honor of Mental Health Awareness Month. So we had to get in while it was still May. And I really want to talk about your hashtag #StandByTeens approach, which I'm really excited about because I feel like a lot of this awareness is really more like fear-mongering about fear.
I agree with you entirely. You know, so what we're doing is we're doing a lot of crisis signaling. So let's level set. There is an issue. There are more young people who are suffering. There's no question about that. And I'm really glad that there's an awareness to that, because what it allows us to do is to have kind of some, you know, targeted efforts at getting young people more resources. And I couldn't be happier about that. But there's 2 issues that I'd like to address. The first I'd like to address is statistics are people without tears. And what I worry about so much about statistics is that people would hear them and draw 1 of 2 conclusions. Either, gosh, this generation is so vulnerable, they're broken. God forbid they would see that, because that would do so much harm, all right? Or they would look at their child and say, you know what? My child doesn't fit into one of the groups that's being highlighted. So for example, they highlight young women as being statistically at greater risk. So I don't want anyone to look at a son and miss the fact that your son growing silent may not be normal and instead is a clue, but not to think, well, all the headlines are about girls. So that's point number one, is look at your child, not the media. But the other thing is that crisis messaging that paints a generation on fire is actually going to backfire. It's going to backfire on the generation who, instead of being seen as resilient and survivors, which they are, is going to be seen as vulnerable or perhaps broken. But it's also going to backfire on the parents, because we know that parents need empowerment. And what parents need to do is to be told what to do, not to be told about crisis at such a level that you just go, gosh, I hope my kid's okay, but you feel like paralyzed into inaction. So just the social media campaign that we're having, hashtag StandByTeens, it's a reframing of the problem through a strength-based lens, but just the name tells you what to do. So think about, you know, all the newspaper articles you see. It's always illustrated by a kid covering their head. That's not a kid you can engage with. The hashtag StandByTeens tells you what to do. If you don't have the perfect words, that's okay. StandByTeens, show up, right? And that alone is something that has incomparable value when parents just show up.
It's really, really true. But it's also not necessarily so easy, right? I mean, I first want you to start with talking a little bit about what the goal, what teenagers do. What is the main role of a teenager in terms of the development? Because I think that's important in terms of framing why there's a struggle.
Yeah. So the main goal of a teenager is to answer this foundational question. Who am I? And there's a couple of questions that they're thinking as they're dancing the dance towards adulthood, towards independence of who am I? It's like, am I normal? And do I fit in? Well, you know what? If you're going to ultimately become independent and figure out who you are, you have to go through a process of trying on a couple different hats, not all of which might look good on you, right? Or might be good for you. And you also have to sometimes reject the people who you love the most. And so it is a very, I really think that one of the greatest impacts I have on parents, like how I make them cry, is when I help them to realize that your teenager temporarily rejecting you is because they love you so much it hurts. And they have trusted you, they've needed you, you've fed them, you've nurtured them, they've relied on you. And the only way they can learn to stand on their own feet is to go through a period of time where they imagine not needing you at all. So they push us away. And when we get pushed away, we're making a very big mistake. But when we stand by teens, not in a way that's pushy or controlling, but in a way that honors their growing independence, where we're a sounding board for them, where we guide them when asked, then that's our role.
It's really hard because you do feel like they're pushing me away, so they don't want me. They don't respect what I stand for. They don't value my opinion.
Yeah, right? So nothing could be further than from the truth. This is actually, not only do I have like 4 decades of experience to prove this isn't true, the research proves it's not true. There are myths about adolescence. And one of those myths is that they don't like adults and they don't care what their parents think. That is absolutely not true. Sometimes behavior is created exactly to deal with the intensity of your feelings. And they actually love us, want to please us, and push us away because they need to pretend that they don't care. And if I can spend a moment about like what our real goal is. Mm-hmm. Our young people have to become independent so they can stand on their own and live their own lives, and if they choose, to have their own families. But our real goal as human beings is interdependence, right? To stick together, to support each other across generations, within communities and across communities. That's our goal. But you know, I want my kids to choose to have me deeply involved in their life. The secret is about how you handle this pushing you away period. If you become more controlling and you double down, my way or the highway, you'll do what I say, then you're going to install control buttons in your kids and they're going to push you away later. Because who wants parents who are going to like nudge them on every small issue or micromanage their life or telling them what they're doing wrong? If on the other hand, we support teenagers in their growing independence, we serve as irreplaceable guides when asked. That's the kind of relationship that can last the whole rest of our lives. And they're going to want us in their lives because we've given them what they needed. Respect as individuals growing on their own and people we love so much that they want guidance from us.
Very hard, though. Right? That's one of the hardest things. And what you didn't say exactly is that I think also a big role of the teenager is to individuate, right? To become their own individual. And you sort of said that. But if that individual is different than the parent, that could be really hard for the teen and also for the parent.
Undoubtedly. And while I didn't use that big fancy word, I did say stand on their own and be independent, right. Their own person. Who am I? I'm not my mother. All of that is what the big fancy word individuate means. So I agree entirely.
Well, wait a second. I just want to make it clear. When you say stand on your own and you say be independent, it reminds me of a two-year-old saying, no, I do it myself. That's how I think of the word independent. But when I say individuate, be an individual, I'm saying I'm trying to figure out who I am and it might be different than you.
Yes.
There's different reasons to push back. One is push back, no, I do it. And the other is push back, no, I'm doing it my way because I'm not like you.
So I agree with you on all fronts. All of these things are in play. But let's talk about why it's so protective to be a parent, right? Now, we all know that not all families function as well as we wish that they did. So I'm really talking about in the ideal. Mm-hmm. So the process of individuation, the process of figuring out who you are, is a process with lots of bumps and bruises and curveballs. Sometimes you don't like yourself. Sometimes people around you don't like you. Sometimes you look on social media, on TV, and you say, I wish I was this, I wish I was that. So why is parental love so protective? Because your parent should see all that is good and right for you, in you, all that is good and right in you, and understand your challenges and your complexities. And now you have an opportunity. You have an opportunity to see your child as they deserve to be seen, as they really are, not based on the behavior they might be displaying. In other words, to really love them and to accept them for who they are. So the fact that the person who knows me the most, the good stuff, the not so good stuff, the complicated stuff, the person who knows me the most chooses to love me, chooses to stand by me, even when I'm not exactly as they had dreamed I would be. That is profoundly protective. And to use kind of a speech line, but that has the most meaning to me, why do we love? We love so that people know that they're worthy of being loved. That's what good parenting is. It's not ending up with a child that's exactly in the frame you had imagined. It's having a child ready to launch into adulthood, knowing they're worthy of being loved. That's the person who's going to be the best boss, the best colleague, the best father, the best mother, the best spouse, friend, someone who knows they're good enough, good to their core. That's what parents can give kids.
That is so beautiful. That really is. But again, I'm going to go back to it's hard. We're talking about mental health awareness. We're talking about a time where our teens are struggling. They really are. And so it's harder for parents. So I want you to talk more about your suggestions for how to stand by teens, knowing that it is a difficult thing to do.
Right. So the first thing you do is you show up. The second thing you do is you remind yourself that this is probably a phase and your child's going to get through it. Why does this matter so much? Because otherwise you're going to be yourself in deeply catastrophic thinking, right? You yourself are going to be imagining the worst. And once you're there, you're no longer co-regulating with the kid. You're no longer lending them their calm. So let's put that aside because I'd love to dig in deep, right? You're not there. And then you say a few things. Thank you for trusting me. You're not alone. You're going to get through this, and I'm going to be there with your side, by your side. You deserve the kind of support so that you can be your best self. And then I'm going to add another one, which is kind of what I needed to hear when I was a depressed teen. And that is that the very best thing about you, your sensitivity, your caring, this is the best thing about you. But it's hard sometimes because it makes you incredibly uncomfortable. You're going to learn to manage the superpower you have. And then you're going to be able to give so much more to other people because of how much you care. Now is your time to learn to manage these full, rich, and deep feelings you have.
It's also so beautiful. But again, it's hard. And I want to go back to the co-regulating idea. Yeah. We talked before, but we should first define what we mean by co-regulation.
I love the fact that you keep saying, but it's hard. And I want to tell you, like, I know that. Yeah. I wouldn't be in this business if it was easy. You wouldn't need me. You wouldn't need people to write books or to have websites. It's exactly because it's hard that people need a few of the tools and tricks to make it easier. Did you hear the "er"?
Like, mm-hmm. Not easy. No, we're not saying this is easy.
I said easier. All right. So let's talk about co-regulation is. So, because it's one of the great gifts we can give people. You're on a plane. There's turbulence. The guy sitting next to you has white knuckles and looks like this. You don't say, what are you thinking about this turbulence? Because you'll freak out. What you do is you look for someone who you think is credible and calm. So you look and you see the flight attendants. And if they're still serving snack mix, you're chill. You know you're good. That was co-regulation. That was lending your calm or borrowing calm in that case from another human being. What we do as co-regulators with teenagers or a child of any age is we lend them our calm. That's why when we went back like a minute ago, remember I said the first thing you do is you convince yourself it's not a catastrophe. If you're not there, you're not ready to comfort your kid, right? Or you pull from what my grandmother from our cultural wisdom says, this too shall pass, right? You enter the thing saying this too shall pass, and then you lend your calm. Now, if you have a kid who is in real crisis in the moment, what I want you to do is look like a duck gliding on the water, like just chill as chill can be, so that no matter how many waves are rippling or winds are blowing, they can look at you and go, huh, that person I love so much, they're okay. I must be okay. But the truth is that our biggest power is not by pretending things are easy. Our biggest power is not by looking strong. It's by showing people how we manage life when it's not easy. So it's much more effective for us to really look like that duck that's gliding on the water because its little feet are paddling like crazy, right? And when we show people how we paddle, that's good parenting.
Right. Not in the moment when your child's upset.
Not at the moment when they're freaking out. Right. When they're freaking out, you give a hug and you glide on the water. But when they have the moment where they're coming down, you show them how you manage life.
Right. But I'm going to back to it's hard. And the reason it's hard is because you yourself may be having your own struggles. And even if you're not, when they push your buttons, it's really hard to be that calm duck floating on the water.
Yep.
You might be paddling as fast as you can. It might not be good enough.
Yeah. So all of this is true. So I'd like to address that on multiple levels. Number one, we're not alone as individuals. And if you need support, get it. Number two, I think it's really important for you to find the time and space to intervene. And if you're still freaking out, part of showing them how you paddle is by saying something like, you need me to be strong for you. You need me to show up, stand by teens. You need me to show up in the way you need me to be. That means I need to go for it and talk to your dad, pray. You know, whatever it is you need to do, this is what I need to do to show up. And then let me give you a final point in this category that I think is unbelievably important. be compassionate with yourself, because the fact that you are imperfect is what makes you an awesome role model, right? And the fact that you are struggling but still choose to love yourself in all of your complexities, imperfections, and inabilities to be the ideal mother, father, aunt, uncle, actually is profoundly important. Why? Because our children are watching us and we are models. But ultimately, you never know when it's going to be that your child is going to need to turn to you and know that they're fully accepted. And part of that, and that might be when someone else is challenging them or bullying them or anything like that. And they're looking at you throughout their entire childhood to say, is this person the person I can trust the most when I need someone deeply? And so they're collecting data. And the data they're collecting the whole time is this person judgmental? And so they're looking at how you work with your spouse, your neighbor, the woman you don't like so much. And above all, they're looking at how you look at yourself when you are imperfect. Mm. And when it turns out that you don't speak ill of other people, it turns out that you are forgiving of other people when they're less perfect. And when you have self-compassion, your child is registering that, starting at very young ages. And what they're learning is, when I really need someone, I'm going to my mom or dad.
I love that. But I want you to also talk a little bit about repair, because as I'm hearing this, I'm thinking, what if someone's listening and think, but I don't do that. I'm like really messing up over and over. I guess it's just like too late for me.
It's never too late. You know, in my last book, the whole last section is about repairing relationships. It's never, ever, ever too late. It is if you ignore the problem. Mm. It is if you say, well, I've done everything wrong, but oh well. But when we say to another human being, I love you so much, I haven't been perfect, but I want to improve, and I need your guidance on what you need from me, like a heartfelt apology that looks at the other human being and says, teach me how to better be with you, support you. That's good advice for peace in our homes, with our spouses. And that's really good advice if you have a 22-year-old that you're estranged from and you want to reconnect with. It's never too late when we choose to be humble and really tell people how much we love them and that we want to do better.
That is so beautiful. I'm going to underscore again that there is no shame in getting help to do this. You may not be able to do this on your own for so many reasons. I've done a lot of podcasts on this, by the way. What's called post-traumatic parenting, where you yourself have so many challenges. And I see this in so many of the families in my practice. So I don't want anyone to think that they can't do this, but you might need to get professional help. It might be individual counseling, it might be family counseling, and there's no shame in that at all.
Amen.
Pride.
Amen. And what I'd like you to do, if you can, for your readers, is give them, or listeners, give them a direct link to what is the most popular single thing on Center for Parent and Teen Communication, Parent and Teen. And it is a how to guide your child towards professional help. It is a walkthrough of the kind of things you say that are strength-based language that prepare someone to get help. And it is our most, not request, I guess the word is downloaded, but our most downloaded piece of advice. And it really is about taking away the shame and the stigma of the help-seeking process. And, you know, part of it, we already did. You know, I mean, again, I share with you, I've had the happiest life of anyone, you know, I'm, you know, in my 60s, and it's just been a wonderful, wonderful run, except for 1 year when I was deeply, deeply depressed. And what I needed that year was someone to not tell me I was messed up and not to throw you're too sensitive, you think too much at me. That wasn't helpful. I needed someone to celebrate really what was my superpower. Like, it was the intense sensitivity that built my career. Mm-hmm. It happened to hurt really bad at 17, but golly, I've spent my whole life supporting teens as a result of it. So, you know, thank goodness for 17 and what I learned. And that's part of what we want to talk to kids about. We want to like acknowledge their pain, not deny it, not make it sound easy, not belittle it.
And not freak out about it.
And you know what else? Oh gosh, if we have another couple minutes, don't ignore it. Don't ignore it. I will tell you, you know, I work in the hospital. I see devastating things sometimes. And so often I hear parents go, you know, that I thought they were just trying to get attention. I didn't want to buy into it. You know, so they're taking, you know, strategies they use to kind of, you know, ignore bad behavior and redirect them that they might have done when they were four. And they're applying it to a teenager and calling the screams for help and attention as bad behavior and thinking that they're doing good parenting by ignoring it. Hashtag stand by teens. Mm-hmm. Show up and ask. If your child is screaming for help, you know, maybe they are exaggerating the problem, but who cares? Mm-hmm. If they're screaming for help and they're screaming for your guidance and your support, show up.
Right. And again, I'm going to say it again, that if you, because a lot of times parents do have trouble because of their own issues or their own inability to tolerate the discomfort of their children by shutting them out, get help for yourself then.
Yeah. Yeah, no, really important. I agree with you. Get support, get help yourself. And you're not in this journey alone. If you're really struggling, turn to another relative, turn to a clergy person, to a teacher. There are a lot of adults who know how to work with young people.
Your pediatrician.
And your pediatrician. Thank you. Yeah, I've heard of pediatricians. For those people who don't know, I am a pediatrician.
But seriously, that is a very good first line. Pediatricians, this is what we're doing more than physical illness to some degree. We know how to handle this, or we should. And we have resources.
And you know what else we know? We often don't just get the young people who are coming with words saying I'm stressed. We are able to help young people understand that their belly aches and that their headaches are related to stress. And without shame or stigma, we are able to get the healing process to begin.
Absolutely. I want to end here, but we're going to pick up the conversation in a few months. But I just wanted you to share your website. I'm going to try to remember the link to that specific article that was most downloaded. If you could send it to me, that would be helpful. So I want you to mention that website and your latest book, and then we're going to stop for now and reconvene in November, if God willing. So another thing I'd like you to do, please, is to tell us about your latest book, which I took out from the library, and I read like 5 pages and had to buy it. So I think it's amazing. And also your website, parentsandteens.com. Did I get it right?
Almost.
I keep getting to the wrong domain, by the way.
So first of all, thank you so much. So the Center for Parent and Teen Communication has a free website called parentandteen.com. And I think people will find some very useful information. And then I actually have 2 books that I think could be particularly useful. There's Building Resilience in Children and Teens, now in its 4th edition, that really is a really detailed approach to stress reduction for young people of any age. And then the latest book is Congrats, You're Having a Teen. And the subtitle says it all, Strengthen Your Family and Raise a Good Person. And the idea here is that we are first refuting the myths about adolescence, right? And we do that with the title, Congrats, You're Having a Teen. Now, we don't in the subtitle say it's an easy job, right? Congrats, you're having a teen. And then what we try to do is give very, very comprehensive advice on how to make it easier.
I think it's fantastic. And I recommend parents read it before adolescence begins.
I agree.
Forewarned, prepared. Not in a fear-mongering, scary way, but in an empowering way.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. Having skills makes things easier.
Exactly. So thank you so much for doing this mini episode with me, and I'm looking forward to doing a longer one down the road.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the JOMA Preventative Health Podcast. If you've enjoyed this, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and share this with your friends. For more information, check out our Instagram at JOMA_org. Check out our website, www.joma.org, that's JOMA.org, or email us at health@joma.org.